but I really had to figure out, who am I? Who am I now that empire is not a thing? And how am I different? And what do I take with me? And who do I want to be?
Why'd you do it? What's that process like?
I started out in my very quiet phase in my cave. I started out with a ton of meditation and breath work. I really had to figure out how to first and foremost forgive all the people involved, the things that I felt were very unfair in my situation, which doesn't serve anybody very well, right? To focus on all the things that, reasons why, you know, somebody did wrong to you.
Welcome to another episode of Deeper Than Dough. We have Abby Buck-Miller on the podcast. Thanks for jumping on.
Thank you.
Welcome.
So Abby was doing our solar installations back in the day at Empire, but I'll let you give your a quick background of.
Sure. Man, that feels like ages ago. So I jumped into the solar space from oil and gas, but I've been in electrical contracting for almost 20 years. Always ran sort of family-run businesses and expanded electrical services in the oil and gas space pretty rapidly. So we jumped into solar. It was about 2017. We built a solar installation company off of a dealer network, which was really cool. And that's where we connected. And the business sort of grew like wildfire. So it was about 4 years' time. I would say by about year three, we had surpassed the $100 million in revenue mark. We eventually reached close to about $250 million.
Okay, let's pause that. You said $100 million in 3 years?
Yeah, absolutely.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it was really fun. It was kind of this just like convergence of my passion, the group's passion, jumping into a new industry and finding a right product market fit with our dealer partners and a business opportunity that sort of was a win-win-win.
Okay, now keep going.
Yeah, keep going.
Keep going.
Sorry.
And then I'm going to ask a bunch of questions.
$100 million to $250 million.
Yeah, so we did about $250 million in our last year in business.
What year was that?
That was in 2021.
Okay.
Yeah, so we were in about 18 states and multiple offices within those states. 100% W-2 model. So we had over 500 employees, field level, you know, guys on the ground, the guys that I love to champion. And then we had our sales force, which was all outsourced, and it was, you know, greater than 500-600 sales professionals that were selling her product, mostly through door knocking, but also through over the phone, remote close methods. And yeah, it was a lot of residential solar moving to the roof.
Okay. And then what happened from there? So you could get into the deep
and so
stuff.
Yeah, fast track to 2021. I lost it all. Everything just went boom. So the really short version, you know, of course there's a lot of layers to it, but the short version is we had some challenges between us as founders. We looked at potentially going some separate ways. We had some challenges that are really, really common in solar right now. And a lot of companies are going through this,
And everything. I know what you're going to say, because we're going through right now. We're not in solar.
Everything, right? Yeah, but it's been really fun to have solar companies reach out and say, oh my gosh, I'm in this challenge. And
all
you
the
know,
finance,
I have nobody to call, but now I get to be that person that's answering the phone, which is kind of fun. But we had troubles getting a hold of the capital that we needed to survive was really it. We were growing really rapidly. We thought we had funding secured sort of right around the bend. The real problem really came from us moving from our accounting software from a QuickBooks, you know, old school system over to a NetSuite. The project got completely foobarred. Our data in the port over, we lost hundreds of thousands of transactions, duplicated hundreds of thousands of other transactions. And essentially, we were at the scale of the business and did not have any visibility to what our financial landscape looked like. So, you know, the funding that was just around the corner never came because we really couldn't put together our financials that made sense. And the funding that we did have.
Your story?
I was going to let you say it, not me.
We're just at a way smaller scale, but our finances have always been a shit show.
Everybody's are. I mean, if anybody looks at you and says they've got an order, then they're probably not, you know, growing or selling a ton. I mean, it's unfortunate because it's common, but it's definitely a lesson to be learned that I'm glad that I learned. But yeah, in short, I lost everything. Really and truly ended up losing money on the business deal as founder and CEO.
Lost money.
Lost personal money, including every dollar ever paid to me via W-2, the whole thing. which is, you know, but I gained obviously so much in experience and lessons that you can't buy anywhere.
And if I could, like, one that's terrible, like, I would never wish, but you've learned a lot from this.
Absolutely.
Because I think every founder has been painted this picture of grow so fast.
Right.
But there's some fundamentals that have to be in place. And there's a bet that you took in the sense where we will grow and our capital expenditure will exceed what revenues we have.
Right.
Not knowing and presuming that there will be funding on the other side.
Right.
And that obviously fell through.
Absolutely. A lot of solar companies get in this position because
All
companies.
You're putting us in a box.
I know.
It's just companies, Abby.
It's really common that a lot of the financiers will sort of take part in your business by saying, yeah, the more you sell, the more we'll front load money.
Yeah.
And so it becomes sort of the first line of credit that you can kind of bring on as a business. Problem is, you sell more, you get more capital to roll, right? But you can sell your way out of, even the floor just falls out the bottom. And so that absolutely was a situation we found ourselves in.
Did you guys go get funding outside of loan partners?
Yeah. So we had a really great loan lined up that was perfect for a business our size. And again, we just could not pull the trigger on it, but it took
before
too long.
That point though, in this huge growth, that 3 years, 0 to 100 million, you were taking on loans.
We absolutely bootstrapped it. We paid ourselves the first few years. It was definitely, I was primarily selling dealers and bringing it on, and that massive, load from commissions. We didn't have that burden on our business. So we bootstrapped.
That's insane that you guys grew that much. Yeah.
Can I ask one more question? Because I think it's important that founders like understand this predicament where, you know, there's this hope and a dream that other financing will come in. But on the other side of the table, they're looking at the founders trying to say, are they going to pull this off?
Right.
And they have every right to pull out of a deal, leaving you high and dry.
Right. And to add to that, when you are reliant on partnerships, you know, things are great when they're great. Partnerships, meaning ours was a partner in the solar space that funded, you know, through sort of a joint win. And, you know, to think that they're not going to take the position of a creditor when needed was definitely one of the mistakes that I made. And they did, you know, and they had the right to, and understandably so. But it was a big loss that a lot of people experienced burn from.
And it was super inspiring on the outside because I didn't know you during that time. We were just doing installs and I was just like, Empire kicks ass. I love the company, you know. But then I kind of all saw it go down. And then you kind of, I don't know how long it was, maybe a year, year and a half. I didn't really hear much. And then I listened to a podcast here and a podcast there. And I'm like, I love this. Because if you can grow that big, that fast, go down and come back, you're like, what am I scared of? You know, like for me, it was like such a big inspiration of like, wow, what Abby did is incredible. Like, because you didn't just disappear. You came back out and you shared your story. And that was a big inspiration to me, but I know a bajillion other people. So one, thank you. That's awesome that you came back out and you're here now sharing the story. But like you dream big, which is freaking cool, and you're doing it again. And then I want to get into what you're doing right now.
Thank you. Yeah, I felt very strongly that I had to figure out how to turn my loss and my pain and my message into something of value for other people. But it took a solid year for me to just be able to see through the cloud and the shitstorm, genuinely. Yep. I just remember thinking, I'm never going to be able to find the value in it. But the light for me was thinking, okay, if I can get to this point, no one can take that experience from me. And, you know, the grit and all of the lessons learned to grow a business to that size, if I can find the value in, you know, what's left over, and if I can turn that into something for myself, it's really all I have for all the years of sacrifice. It's all I have. So I got out there and started to do some podcasts, and, you know, it was a little terrified at first. Like, how do I even begin to talk about the story? Because it was so personal and the pain was still so real, you know, because you don't just go, okay, 6 months, you kind of go into a cave and you come out and everything's fine. It is a multiple year legal and personal battle and rebuilding your life. That's not.
Which is still going on, right?
It's still going on. Yeah, I had to finally just say, there isn't this checkpoint in time where everything's going to be okay, or my life's going to be mine again, or things are going to look the same. I just have to keep pushing forward, knowing this is part of my reality, and I have to do the best that I can do with what I have right now. And a lot of that was experience, relationships, you know, because people that knew me and were close to me, you know, were still there and still wanted to figure out how to do business and wanted to learn from me and figure out, you know, how the success was had. And so, you know, you just kind of pull yourself up and keep on keeping on, I guess.
Yeah. Well, it was a big, you know, downturn, but it was a bigger upturn than any of your friends have ever known it. You know, like,
yeah,
who knows somebody that could do that, you know, 0 to 250 million, which is just so, so cool that you did that.
Thank you.
Okay. And tell us what you're doing right now.
So right now I'm CEO founder. We started a tech company, which was kind of fun and cool.
Still a good pivot.
Yeah. It's been an interesting new challenge. We're still in services, so it feels familiar. Still primarily serving solar, which is also very familiar. Primarily running the site survey process. So our tech is built to say that these agents or contractors can get on our platform, claim time availability, region availability to come to these homes. And they can say, here's the tools I have, experience, certifications, licenses, et cetera. We're essentially just pairing a need for labor with labor in the space. So right now, our focus has been pretty minimal, but we're already on pace for $2.5 million in recurring revenue, which is really
nice
fun.
Nice job. How long did that take?
We're about a year and a half in. So it's been really, really fun. And jumping into this business, I kind of said, what do I want differently this time? You know, what do I want to do different? And one of the pieces was the revenue model, for sure. Mm-hmm. And to not feel like, you know, you got to scrap and fight for every dollar. And to not run a business that's very heavily capital intensive. And so that's been fun. It's been good.
So let's talk about that because it's super cool. How many developers and then the customer base? Is this like the start of what could expand into a much bigger product?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we're definitely just scratching the surface. We've been really trying to prove the model.
Yeah.
Really importantly, the kind of the recurring revenue model. What we'd like to do is fit ourselves with EPCs, but in the future, other contractors across different trades.
EPC is an installer.
Thank you. Solar installer, which is an electrical contractor. Thank you for letting me take my solar hat off for a minute. Yeah, it's essentially electrical contractors that focus on solar. They're our primary client right now. So you asked, I lost the question.
Ask how many developers.
Buffering developers. Okay. Yeah, so we've got, we brought a developer in early on the cap table and he's incredible. And then we've got three that we've sort of bleed off projects to in flow and downflow. And we're building integrations with some of the other bigger names in the space. And that's fun.
And if I understand, the product almost helps scale almost infinitely because the problem becomes, how do you find people to go sell or install?
Yeah,
this makes it really easy to onboard and execute.
The problem in contracting space, and especially in solar, is that if you want to sell within a new market, to set up a new brick and mortar is difficult. And you don't know how well the market's going to be or do, yeah, right, from a sales perspective. So they can essentially pull the lever, which is us. We can come in and service their sales as they come through and they can really get a feel for the market. But also summer boom, if they take on a big team, or in our industry, it's really common to do like a blitz model where, yeah, guys will bomb and sell, you know, 100 accounts and then they leave. That can be brutal for a full installer EPC organization to try to staff. I've done it before.
And that's what you had, right?
We would do, we were doing year round, but it was still very summer heavy.
Yeah.
But there's other, it's like, I'm going to rent an Airbnb, 5 Airbnb in Texas, mm-hmm, and we're going to throw 20 guys out there for a month.
Yeah.
It's literally just for a month. And then you're gone.
Right, right. Forever. So if you're an, yeah, installer, if you have any hard costs in that market, they can't get quality installs that make sense, right? And if a company tries, Empire did, you know, it's not something I recommend.
Makes sense.
Okay. Yeah, so essentially we can just be an overflow for seasonality, for trying new markets out or bringing on a new sales team. And they can really offload an entire department or two to our services.
And what is the data saying? Is it saying that it's going to allow exponential growth, or are there still things that need to be worked out to allow for this type of growth to happen?
Yeah, I mean, the platform is so wide open in the sense that we can just shop, we can have warranty labor electricians just doing fix-it work. I mean, there's really no limit to this. So in the solar space, we've been really trying to focus on what are the biggest needs that people have and the problems that are the most painful that we can look to solve for this. But, you know, home inspections, we can really just dispatch people into those projects. There's not really any sort of restraints around this short of understanding each different industry and kind of the nuances. Yeah. Solar is just so perfect because we know it so well.
So you talked about the first company, Empire versus, remember the name of?
Radical.
Radical. And the things that you learned from Empire that you wanted to shift. And that's what you're after, more of the recurring revenue. What about the emotion of like, why did you start Empire? What were you after emotionally versus what you're after emotionally on this one?
Oh man. You know, I think at the time starting Empire, I was after career advancement, prove something to myself, see what I could do. It was a family organization. So the idea of just elevating, you know, all the people around you that you love was really.
Because you and your sister, right?
My sister, my husband, lots of siblings, lots of people as we grew, of course, right? Lots of people in the mix. But my dad's company primarily is where it started. And so there's a lot of us.
Okay.
I don't think it was until later, you know, reflecting back and what was it really all for? To your point, to what you said earlier, I do love to dream really big and feel like I'm taking on just a massive, audacious goal. And I think that was, you know, out of the gate where maybe we had some misalignment, you know, in a family business, sometimes family, you know, really wants to have a small, understandable, small company that you can kind of, you know, have control over. And I was sort of shooting for the moon and everybody kind of ends up in different camps at that point. But
I like how you said the word understandable. When you're growing that fast,
there's no way that everybody's going to agree on everything.
No, well, you build a beast that then can swallow you alive. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So this time around, that was kind of what you just described. That was the emotion that you're looking for in Empire. Now, what are you looking for this time around with that experience behind you?
I am looking for freedom. I'm looking for the ability to take all of the things that I feel like are my special, unique gifts and put them to use and find other people along the way that I can sort of empower and put to work in these different businesses and achieve a lot of different dreams at once. So that's a long-winded way of saying entrepreneurship, I know, is for me. I know it because, you know, I've absolutely survived hell and I can't think of doing else, but
yeah, you're back at it. You're back at it.
So you're sick in the head as well.
Exactly.
It's an addiction.
I've never been well in the head, but I'm unemployable. I tried working for someone in the break and thought this is going to be a good change of pace. I won't have to necessarily care as much. It was a CEO role. So of course you care and you're responsible for the P&L, but I just couldn't find the same spark and passion. It wasn't there. And so, I've been looking for within this new business, how do I create my own reality? I've created a reality that ate me alive. I created something really neat that meant a lot to a lot of people. But when I look back at what I created for myself, it really was not what I really wanted. I don't think I was really purposeful or specific about what I wanted to build. I just wanted to build something big and great.
I think that's how everybody starts and how most of us keep doing it forever. We don't ever take the time to kind of sit back and be like, wait, what do I actually want? Like, I'm making a great company, but why?
Right.
And that's why I was asking specific on the motion. Cause you could typically be like, I want it big and great because I want to feel a certain way. And why do I want to feel that certain way? You know, and really dive in into that type of.
There's a lot of growing up that you do through that process too. And we're talking, you know, a timeline in my life where I'm turning 40 here in a few months, which is painful, but my 30s, we're talking about my entire 30s. And as a young mom with four kids, and now my kids are starting to leave the house, which is crazy. But that's one of the things that's always stood out to me about you, Bennett, is that you are very loud about how important your family is to you and about prioritizing the things that you could turn around and go, wait, I have something to enjoy this with, right? I've got a family that and kids that know me and love me. I sacrificed years where I just never saw my kids, and it's just the reality. It's part of it that I had to, you know, look at myself and when I was, my phone wasn't ringing anymore and I was all alone and trying to figure out my next steps. My kids were there and you kind of just go, you can't get the 10 years back. It's just gone, you know? And so you start to think of things a little bit different, but the concept of me building something that creates freedom for myself and for other people, financial freedom, freedom to be a good parent, be a good friend, also to chase the things that fill me up and make me happy, in addition to making a lot of other people very wealthy. It's just a different perspective or lens you look at things through, I guess.
Yeah, but you have to have that first experience.
Totally.
Or else there's nothing that will shift your lens, right? You have to have that change. So anyways, I love how you look at that. You're like, there's nothing that would have taught me that. I mean, you could have went to every business school in America for all 4 years and paid all, you know, and you would have learned everything you did. Tell me about the identity and how you, because as an entrepreneur, you are your company.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
How did you, after not being with Empire anymore, what was that process? I mean, that's a lot of times it's very down in the dumps, depression, depressive.
Yeah.
How are you able to pull yourself out of that?
Okay. I think that's probably the one of the biggest lessons I took with me is you want to make it personal. You know, you want to make your business an extension of yourself. It's just so natural. But I made mine literally reliant on my face and me and every part of me. And it wasn't a business that could thrive without me in the seat doing the things that I was doing. And so that was a weakness on my part, right? But that was a big lesson for me to learn. I feel like I'm not allowed to cuss. I'm like, damn it, I forgot where I was going.
You can say whatever you want.
Ask me the question you asked again. I was talking
about detaching your personal identity, with Empire.
Afterwards.
Okay. Afterwards,
thank
yeah.
You. Yeah, so there were definitely a lot of depressive moments. I would be lying if I would say, you know, to say that those are 100% behind me. It's truly not linear. People say that, you know, healing or going through something really life-changing is not linear. There's days where I'm ready to take on the world and I'm grateful for what happened.
Hours, not even days. It's hours it goes up and down.
True. It's so true. You know, and then there's others where I feel, you know, somewhat lost again. But I think the idea that, you know, I was Abby from Empire and then I was nobody that anybody knows or cares about on the street was weird. It was different. There was part of it that was really relieving because that pressure is just so, it can feel really intense.
No, never intense. Because to paint a picture, like you're on the highest high, like you're growing so fast, have all the validation, people look up to you, and the momentum is there. I can conquer anything. They're just getting everything taken from you.
Yeah,
everything is gone.
People, they sort of dehumanize you, right? In both ways, in a positive and negative. Yeah. They look to you and say, "You're my hero. How do I be like you? How do I, you know, do some of the things that you've done?" And then on the other stretch of it, you've got the ugly, which is just like, I knew you were never going to make it. And, you know, you're a criminal and just all of these crazy things that people love to throw stones the minute that they have a chance to. Right. And so I just experienced the broad range of that. But I really had to figure out, who am I? Who am I now that Empire is not a thing? And how am I different? And what do I take with me? And who do I want to be? And
why'd you do it? What's that process like?
I started out in my very quiet phase in my cave. I started out with a ton of meditation and breath work. I really had to figure out how to first and foremost forgive all the people involved, the things that I felt were very unfair in my situation, which doesn't serve anybody very well, right? To focus on all the things that reasons why, you know, somebody did wrong to you. Through a lot of breath work and really neat experiences, I found myself able to actually start envisioning those people specifically. And this is going to sound a little bit crazy, but I felt like I could start to see their perspectives and feel their own hurt and feel their own challenges. And I actually did find, first and foremost, forgiveness within those situations. And then it was time to start looking at me when I could finally quit looking at everybody else, right? And all of the anger could be put on a shelf. And as I started to look at myself, I immediately went through a phase of, I'm not good at anything and I don't know what I'm here for, right? Because I had this massive failure. So all of the reasons I doubted myself must have been right, and I don't know what I do right. And so a lot for me that was really helpful was getting back in the arena and doing something specifically that I am good at. And I, you know, have those moments where I'm like, shit, I kind of rocked that. That was really good. That reminds me why I'm good at what I do. And, you know, the humbling moments, the humility is so good for us as people to just have those minutes and go, why am I here? What can I even do? Right. Because it allows you a different level of empathy and working with people and partnering and building even a product or presenting yourself into a company and saying, you know, trust me, work with me. Those are all just opportunities that you take a different approach with after you've been humbled in a very, very big way.
And breath work was a big thing for you, which I feel like I've been hearing that a ton lately, and because I've been getting into it. But it's just, I mean, are you doing this on YouTube and doing different, it's like a 3-minute thing, a 30-minute thing. I mean, people do this for an hour, yeah. And you can get in these psychedelic states
exactly. Just
with your breath, or yeah. You could just take psychedelics. That's kind of the cheat way that I do.
I haven't actually done that. Actually, I did as a teenager and I didn't have great experience. So I was hesitant moving okay. Into breath work because, psychedelic experience is connected to some PTSD for me. Bad mushroom experience in a movie theater. We'll have to go into that another time.
That says a lot right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
With all the mistakes I've made, I did hire some dude that was CEO of a big company that was doing, you know, 100+ million. I'm like, just gave him the keys to the car, you know, and then several $100,000 later in just a few months, it was gone. And I was very down on myself.
Yeah.
And very mad at him. And it was a mushroom experience. And then I thought, well, how does he feel? Like, it's not like he wanted to do this. Like, he knows he lost all the money. He knows he failed.
Right.
And then I'm like, he's not in a good situation either. When I was more like, how could he do this to me? I'm like, he didn't do anything to me. He made a mistake. He didn't know what he was doing. I didn't know what I was doing. And here we are. Right. But that was, anyways, psychedelics definitely helped me get there. But then I started viewing him different. And I'm like, okay, he's probably in just as much pain, even though it wasn't his money, right. But it's still the same guilt and shame or embarrassment that he's going through that I'm going through.
Yeah, it's so true. I had a connection say, hey, join this like 3-month group and we're going to do breath work once a week. And I went, oh, I'm not really sure. I really appreciated and enjoyed meditation when I could get into it. Uh-huh. But I had a hard time quieting my mind. I'm very, you know, ADD, thoughts all over the place. So I opened myself up and I kind of went through this phase for 6 months where I was like, I'm going to say yes to anything people invite me to. I'm just going to say yes and just try new things and just feel it all out. I did breath work. The first time was a little bit odd. And then the second time I started to tap into that space where it is more of a psychedelic experience. And there's, you know, there's purposeful sort of themes in each of these. And it was really just a huge eye-opening experience for me. There was one, you know, where the practitioner taking us through, guided us through like this, your lineage or your line of people, sort of your father's line over your left shoulder and your mother's line over your right shoulder. And it's really crazy how your own mind, your own subconscious can really sort of solve these problems and start to bring to light so much in the way of healing. I kept envisioning during these breathwork sessions. This is going to sound so silly, but I'm just going to say it anyway. I kept envisioning after what I'd been through, this like heart that lived in my chest that looked gray and was just lifeless and it was like a rock. And I just felt like I couldn't be who I was, or I couldn't love other people because I just felt so closed off and I was so hurt by all the things that had happened. And so as I went through this breathwork process, I tried to heal it on my own. And, you know, you sort of visualize it sort of coming back to life. And through a lot of those experiences, like I said, the people who, you know, had ripped me off for millions of dollars, I could envision them and the pain they were going through and the pressure and, you know, their experiences. And whether or not I made the story up in my mind, it's sort of irrelevant to the fact that I genuinely sat it here and I moved on. And it wasn't until I was, you know, free of that weight that I could actually keep walking forward. So
that's super powerful.
Yeah.
That's not silly at all, by the way. I mean, whatever works, works.
Right.
And everybody has different experiences. But anybody that's done breath work or meditation or psychedelics, it's like, oh no, that's not weird at all.
Fully normal.
We're all dealing with that shit.
Right? It's true.
So anyways, no, I appreciate you sharing that. Mm-hmm. Going forward on, so the mental health, meditation, breath work, anything else that you maybe are currently doing? Like, how are you proactive with your mental health, whether it's a daily or weekly basis because you're never going to be done with it. And again, I do feel like people say ups and downs with days, which I don't know if that's true. I really think it's ups and downs by every few chunks of hours. Like, I woke up feeling great. By lunchtime, I felt terrible because of a text message that I received, or, you know.
It's true. And you're reminding me of, I think, the thing that got me through the baby steps phase was something that I had, my therapist had shared with me, and it was just trigger management. because in early days, I was so triggered by every little thing that you could imagine, right? My loss, or, you know, the lawsuits hitting me, or, you know, the financial mess that I found myself in, or people, everything triggered me. And, you know, the advice that I was given was just take those triggers on in manageable doses. Mm-hmm. And your threshold is maybe this big at first. So conversations and situations that trigger you, you know, you kindly excuse yourself from, and you don't have those conversations for a while. And so it was very much a matter of like re-expanding and working on my threshold for the things that I could be exposed to that triggered me. And then slowly things didn't trigger me.
And I want to take a second on there, because I think a lot of people think they have to take everything on all at once because they have this obligation. But if you put you first, from what I'm hearing, is like taking in manageable doses, and that's okay, whatever that extent is, because you can't conquer the world all at once, and you need to put your mental health first.
Right. Absolutely. Therapy is really big. I haven't been as consistent with it and found what fits for me. You know, and sometimes as an entrepreneur, I think to find the right therapist that can really understand, it's nearly impossible. So that's been really difficult for me to find a good fit there. But you know, I'm married almost 20 years now, and my poor husband becomes my sounding board. But I'm in a marriage where I can just share my thoughts and my feelings very, very openly. And I believe in just being sort of transparent with my, you know, friends and those close to me. And I think that helps a ton, even if it means saying, you know what, I'm not okay, and I think tomorrow I'm going to be fine, but right now I'm not. And so I'm going to excuse myself until I am. And you kind of go through those. But support is everything. So, you know, find your support system for sure.
Putting yourself first and not having the stigma of I'm being selfish.
Absolutely.
Just like, no, everybody's selfish. Everything we've ever done is always selfish. It's just, are you acknowledging it or are you not acknowledging it? And you do need to take care of yourself.
Yeah, I think with women, that's even worse, right? You think as a mom that you got to be the one that has all the answers. And then as a mom and a CEO, I definitely got in that trap. Would never allowed myself a minute to have a thought to myself. And I do things very differently these days so that I can serve others for sure. But the mental health issue is one that's close to me. I grew up with an adopted brother who was schizophrenic and lots of mental health challenges sort of on both sides of my family. And, you know, it can create a lot of lack of safety, a lack of security, but also, again, sort of an empathy for what people are going through and a seriousness to talking about it really openly and getting help for people and getting help for yourself when needed and not having the stigma. I think there's unnecessarily a lot of stigma around it for sure.
Well, thank you for being here with us. We got one last question for you.
Okay.
When it's all said and done, what do you want to be remembered by?
I want to be remembered for completely leaving my mark and specifically revolutionizing the way that things are done. I love contracting. I love blue collar workers. And I love that industry as a whole. And if I can be remembered for one thing, it will be that I changed the industry and the environment and allowed a lot of people that work really hard for their money to do better for themselves and for their families and provide an up-leveling for an industry that I think needs it. So that's it.
Thank you so much. Where can our guests find you?
Find me on Instagram, Abby Buckmiller, and LinkedIn at the same handle.
So thank you so much for being on our podcast.
Appreciate you.
Thank you.